So far, if you weren't here this morning for class, so far we've talked about some things, three different things that we can do in order to be more effective in our local evangelistic efforts. One of those things is that we should rehearse, relive, recall our own story so that we can share that with others. And the second one is this paradigm shift that we need to have about thinking souls first. And the third that we talked about was having an eldership that's fully supportive of and involved in the outreach activities in a local congregation. But I wanted, before we went any further, because most of the people, if 30 years ago, most of the people in the congregation would have known me, but most of the people in this congregation don't. So I wanted to share a couple of other things that were very impactful for me as far as my story is concerned, that were things that happened while we were in Sanford. The first one was Brother Paul Savage came in the fall of 1992, and he preached a gospel sermon. And during that sermon, I had been working at Tyson Foods. I think Jackie's here somewhere. Jackie and Sandy McMillan worked at the plant that I helped manage. In that, one of the lessons that Brother Savage preached, he talked about the fact that we should be in attendance when the Lord's church meets, because the Lord is the one gathering us together. And unless we have a reason that the Lord would say this is a good reason to miss the services of the Lord's church, that we ought to be here if we can be. And of course, the Lord understands when you can't be. I'm not making any comment about that. But I had been managing second and third shift at the Mexican Original plant for a number of years. And I went forward. It was in the Civitan building. I went forward and repented of that publicly. And then the next day, I went to talk to, we were talking about Rob Adler. I went to talk to my boss, Rob Adler, and I said, I got something we got to talk about. And he said, what's that? And I said, I came to realize at services last night that I've been making a willful decision to not be at services on Wednesday night. And I can no longer do that. And I said, the plant is, church building is at the Civitan building down on Hawkins Avenue. It's less than 10 minutes away. I've got a pager. Didn't have cell phones back then. I've got a pager. I've got two shift managers, and I've got two superintendents and like 13 or whatever it was, supervisors there on site to handle things if things went wrong. And if anything catastrophic happened while they were gone, they could page me and I could be back in less than 15 minutes. So that's what I told them. I said, so I can no longer miss Wednesday night services. You know what he said? He said, okay. And it was just like that. And I had been a Christian for a year and a half. And it had never even occurred to me that it would be possible for me to even ask to be away from the building. So I've got a very good friend that he will be in the slide sometime this week, because I'm real slow. I talk too much. And he has the same kind of problem. I told him that story, and I'm working with him to help him understand. When you're the one that's in charge, and you're the one that can make decisions about how you spend your time, you need to be very, very careful with those decisions, because later on in Hebrews chapter 10, it talks about if we sin willfully after we received a knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sins. The second thing that happened was Maria had an ectopic pregnancy. And on January 7th, 1992, she almost died. Baby did die. And I spent 3 days in the hospital. Charlene, Lynn, Teresa, a lot of people were very, very kind to us and helpful during that time. And I show you how I showed the appreciation for that. When Mike said, you know, you need to go home and get some rest after being in the hospital with Maria for 3 days. I drive from the hospital here in Sanford. I'm going out Steel Bridge Road. We rented a house out there on Steel Bridge out towards Charlene and Turner. And on the way, between the two, was a liquor store. And I pulled into the parking lot of the liquor store because I was going to go in and buy some whiskey, and I was going to drink my problems away. And I sat there in the parking lot with my hands on the steering wheel until my knuckles turned white, and I absolutely had an absolute meltdown, bawling. and crying my eyes out and saying, life has to be better than this. That was January 10th, 1992. And for the last 34 years and 3 months, I've never had a desire to have a drink of alcohol again. Those two things happened here. And I share those things with you because, number one, I mentioned in the Bible class, I didn't grow up with any spiritual training. I had no religious background. I just had questions, and I was looking for answers. And even before we got here, this is another thing. I wasn't even going to talk about this, but this is another thing. I in my life, I dated 5 girls, and I stuck with the last one. Coming up on 36 years, right? Of those 5, no background in the Churches of Christ, 4 of the 5 were members of the Church of Christ. Coincidence? It just so happens? I don't know. I think I do know, but the thing that I wanted to share with you, because this is something that's really important to me, is something happened with 3 of those 4 that, brethren, ought never to happen. Because the first 3 I dated, they all took me to church with them. They were all very nice girls. That's why I dated girls from the Churches of Christ, because everyone I met was nice, right? Including Maria. 3 of them took me to church, introduced me to their parents, introduced me to the preachers. That started when I was 17 years old. I married Maria when I was 28 years old. Wasn't a Christian. Because of those first 3 that I dated, not a single person, not a preacher, a member, or a dad asked me for a Bible study. Not a single one. That's why I'm passionate about local evangelism, because, brethren, it ought not to be so. You know the first thing Maria wanted to do when we met? She wanted to study the Bible. And neither her dad nor the preacher we were at, or anyone else except her, until we came to Sanford, North Carolina, wanted to study the Bible with me. It ought not to be so. And I say that, it's really personal to tell you those things, but see, if personal evangelism ought to be anything, it ought to be personal, right? We ought to be able to share what's important to us, because you know what? There might be somebody here today that struggles with alcohol or some other kind of addiction. I don't know. There might be somebody here today that's had, at that time, 11 or 12 years of exposure to the church, and no one's ever asked him for a Bible study. Ought not to be so. And so it's very important to me when we're talking about this subject that you understand that it's not about me, but it is about me in that it's a personal thing, and it should be, if anything, it should be personal. And so we don't need to leave this out in our efforts to try to reach people, because it's very powerful. Paul used it. Jesus used illustrations from everyday life all the time when he taught. So let's not leave this out of our toolbox of evangelism to try to relate to people, because you just don't know. You don't know what somebody might be going through. We close the class session with talking about the next important element a congregation needs is someone to drive the efforts. Everywhere I've been since I have become a gospel preacher, that driver has been me. Can you believe that? Is that hard to believe? It's not hard to believe, but it's not hard to believe because that's the way it is most places. Is the driver is typically the gospel preacher, but guess what? It's not always the pulpit minister. This guy's name is Ruel Reyes. Ruel's from the Philippines. When I moved to the island of Saipan, when my family and I moved there in 2008, he had been attending a new converts and seekers class for about 3 weeks. We studied for another 6 weeks. I was driving him home up to Navy Hill. He's a diesel mechanic, by the way, no training, no spiritual training. His wife and young kids lived in the Philippines. People that moved to Saipan moved there for work because there is no work in the Philippines, and they have to do that to provide for their families. Ruel got to see his family, still does. About every 2.5 years, he gets to go home to see his family. So one night after our Thursday night class, while I'm driving him back to Navy Hill, he said, "Brother Pat, I must be baptized. I know I have to be baptized." We drive down to Garapan Beach. I baptize him into Christ, take him home. That's on Friday morning after midnight, Thursday night. Sunday, we have a men's business meeting there. And in that meeting, I mentioned that I was going in 2 weeks to Tinian, the neighboring island, to Dornoch, to evangelize and to have a worship service in that meeting. After having been a Christian for 2.5 days, Ruel says, I want to go with you. I want to evangelize. And in the next 2 weeks, I want you to help me prepare a lesson so I can teach the Bible class. 2.5 days after being a Christian, he's asking for that. So you know what we did for 2 weeks, brother? You know what we did? We studied the Bible together, and he prepared a lesson, and I have the lesson, the notes I took. I meant to bring it up here. I have the notes in my briefcase over here of the notes I took from that lesson in 2009 that Ruel taught during Bible class. Well, this is a picture of him doing that lesson right there. And there was a lady on the island of Tinian and Saipan that worked for Hertz Rental Car, because when we went over there, we had to rent a car. And I talked to her, and she actually came to one of those new converts class, and she loved it. We're going to be over on your island. Well, when are you coming? We're coming in 2 weeks. Okay, I'm going to be there. Ruel gets up to do the Bible class. Nobody's there. We door knocked for 2 solid days. Not a single person showed up. It was Ruel and I that were there at that service. And I told him, I said, brother, I know this has to be disappointing to you, so if you would like for me to teach the class, I will do that for you. And he goes, no, brother, I prepared the lesson. I'm teaching it. And he started teaching. And I started taking notes. And 20 minutes in, I hear the wheels outside on the crushed coral driveway. And I turn around, and it's Elma, the girl who said she would come. And brethren, this was the most spiritually intense moment of my life, before and after. Because what you have here is you have a young man who's a Christian 2.5 weeks, proclaiming the gospel to a woman who's never been in a service of the Lord's church before. Ruel went home to the Philippines. And in, over the last, that was in 2008, by the way, so 18 years. In 18 years of going back every two years, he lives on a small island in the Philippines. By the way, do you know how many islands there are in the Philippines? 8,000. And of those 8,000, about 6,000 of them have people living on them. And most of those have no church on them. He wanted to learn to do that Bible class because he wanted to go home and teach his family. And over the last 18 years, his wife, his kids that have grown up, all of his kids, his mother, his father, his mother-in-law, father-in-law, and 20 other people in his tribe have become, they have a Church of Christ in his village because of the zeal that this man, who's the driver, he's not the preacher, he's a diesel mechanic. The driver of the Saipan Church of Christ is the one that drives all the evangelistic efforts there. I pray to God that even with a mini stroke, I never forget the lessons that I learned from Ruel Reyes. But it's not just Ruel. If you go to PTP, you might have seen this guy before. His name's Taylor Hughes. Taylor came to our congregation from he had been attending a congregation down the road. He lived closer to our congregation. A preacher, a friend of mine, said, hey, if you go over there to Chase Park, this is what Taylor told me, there's somebody there that will study the Bible with you. And Taylor told me that. I said, I'm that guy he was talking about. He said, I figured it was. And so we started studying the Bible. We averaged about 3 hours a time every time we studied because he had so many questions. It reminded me a lot of when I was here with Mike and Marie and I were here with Mike and Teresa Glenn because they did the exact same thing with us for about 2.5 years. For about 8 weeks, we studied the Bible. He was dating a girl and attending a Baptist church with this girl. She was the pastor's daughter. And there was about 10 other people in the youth group, the teenagers side from high school and college. They've come together on Bible studies. We get done with the study after, like I said, 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever. He decides on a Sunday afternoon after we finish our Bible study, he wanted to be baptized. And he said, and by the way, I won't be able to stay after services very long. He knew before the week was over he was going to obey the gospel. So you know what he did the day he was baptized, less than 2 hours after he was baptized? He was having a Bible study with 10 kids in the Baptist church and his girlfriend at the time. And he wanted them to know what it was he had done, the decision he had made. No religious formal training. He just had a desire to know God's word. And once he learned it, he obeyed it, and he wanted to share it with him. And then about a month later, his girlfriend's daddy said, I've had enough of this. And he said, I need you to come talk to me. And so he came to my office on a Saturday morning about 6 o'clock in the morning for us to study together, because he was going to go and he was going to preach the gospel, teach the gospel to a guy who'd been preaching 35 years in a denomination. And in that amount of time we studied before he was supposed to go meet him, he made the decision he wasn't going to go. I said, okay, I'll support you in whatever you do. He said, I don't think it'll do any good. And that's when I corrected him. I said, now, brother, you need to understand something. What good it will do is your girlfriend knows you've agreed to it. And all these kids you've been going to these, having these Bible classes with the youth group, they know you've agreed to it. And if you don't go, they're going to think you're not willing or able to defend what you believe in. By the time we left, we prayed and he went. And he spent 3 hours talking to the guy. And he left, and there was no change except his girlfriend broke up with him over it. And then he started dating Alexia, and about 4 years ago at PTP, after studying with Alexia for 2 or 3 months, she comes from a Messianic Jewish family. Messianic Jewish family. And after about 2, maybe 3 months at PTP at the Sevierville Church of Christ, Taylor baptized her into Christ. And the next year at PTP, he called me a couple of weeks ahead of time and he said, I need your help with something. And that something was up on the parkway at Sevierville. He wanted Maria and I to be there and take pictures of him asking Alexia to be his bride. Taylor is a member of the Hatton Church of Christ. He is a maintenance technician at an auto parts plant in Athens, Alabama. No formal training, and I baptized him 6.5 years ago after studying with him. He's now brought 9 people to Christ while sitting in the pew of the Church of Christ with no formal training, just a desire to please God and to share his faith with others. 2 drivers, Ruel and Taylor, neither one of them is a gospel preacher. They understand it. They get it. They get what the responsibilities we have that we take upon ourselves when we put on Christ in baptism. I thought this was going to be the invitation because I didn't get far enough in the class. We're going to skip over that. I'm not going to do the invitation because I'm not stopping. Not right now. The next class that we had, or the lesson we were going to teach during the sermon today, was what is mandatory? This is the second part of the 6-part lesson for the gospel meeting. What's mandatory for local evangelism to be effective? And the reading that we have from Ephesians 4:16, and the point that I make here is that every part is doing its share. Everybody's got something that they need to do in regards to local evangelism. So the final element needed is the support of the entire congregation, and here's why. The aspirational goal for every congregation is for every Christian to be enthusiastically involved in a local evangelistic effort. It has to be that way. You cannot have an aspirational goal in a congregation that says this half of the building is going to be evangelistic and this half doesn't have to be. You know what's going to happen when you do that? A lot of people are going to start moving and sitting over here. Am I right? So what's the goal? The goal is, and what we should strive for, is every single Christian to be involved in local evangelistic efforts. The concept of aspirational goals is biblical. God the Father has aspirational goal which will not be met, but one which you and I must attempt to achieve on His behalf. What is that? For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4. Jesus says in Matthew 7, 13 and 14, He confirms the fact that many people are going to be lost. What does that mean? It means the most powerful being in the universe isn't going to get it the way He wants it. Because He wants everybody to be saved. And He knows, because He created us, that not everybody's going to obey the gospel. That is a very profound thing to think about, isn't it? That God, who's the most powerful being in the universe, is not going to force anybody to obey the gospel. We all have free will. We can all make the choice and must make the choice for ourselves. So after we have recalled our story, we have the eldership behind it, the driver in place, and the congregation supporting it, how is it? when we talk about practical things that we can do, how is it that we get our local evangelistic efforts jump-started? And I would suggest to you that it's very simple. Maybe so simple that people won't do it or won't believe it. But I've been doing this now for about almost 30 years, about 25 years that I've been doing this, is we must, part of this paradigm shift is we must take our everyday conversations, not asking anybody in the church to do anything you're not already doing. You're already having conversations with people. But when you're doing it, you have to interject into those conversations something of a spiritual nature. What a beautiful day the Lord has granted us in Central North Carolina today. How hard is that? And you don't have to say what I say, because you shouldn't say what I say. You should say what will come to you naturally, that will flow. Because if it's not, if it sounds like a canned speech, you know what's going to happen? Everybody's going to know it. The people you're trying to reach are going to know it. Well, he's just reciting from rote memory. That's not the way it cannot be that way. It's got to be something from your heart. So it's something you meditate upon. If we think about things in advance before we do other things, why wouldn't we think in advance about what are we going to do when we find someone interested in the gospel? What's more important than that? Nothing. It's not difficult to do this. And I have, through my studies and talking to the men I mentioned earlier, I have found that if you have one person in a congregation driving it and they're the only one doing it, you know how many people are converted in that congregation in a year? On average? 3. Because local evangelism is not being flippant or nonchalant. It's a numbers game. If you have one person talking to, if they commit, like what I ask congregations to do, individuals and congregations to do, say one thing to one person a day. That's it. It's not hard to remember. Say one thing to one person a day. You got a congregate, how many folks you got, Van? Usually about 50 or 60, maybe 70 people. And if you did that, if every Christian in here did that, and let's say it's 50, it's going to take you 20 days, 1,000 comments, before you get somebody to say yes to come to services. And you know what? It's going to take you another 20 days to get the people that say yes, the one person to say yes to a Bible study. It's going to take you about, on average, another 20 days to get a Bible study. And then it's going to take you about another 30 to 45 days to go through the Bible study for that person to be saved. If you've got one person doing it, that's why it only adds up to about 3 a year. What if you had 50? Well, if one adds up to 3, 50 adds up. You guys know some basic math? You're breaking the wall. You're pushing the walls back, right, man? That's how y'all built it, right? Was to make this thing bigger. If a congregation, that's how it works. It works that way if we will commit to doing that. And I'm not saying that everybody will commit to it. I've never been anywhere where everybody has committed to it. But I can't. Tell people it's okay for you to be the person not to be involved. Because if I do that, if we don't have that aspirational goal, then almost everybody's going to say, that's not my role. That's the preacher's role. And that's just wrong. So we need to interject these things into our everyday conversations. And when any interest at all is shown, any, if they don't just stare at you blankly, or if they don't just repudiate what you say by saying there is no God, you're a fool, right? And if they say that, you know what you do? You shake the dust off your feet, and then maybe a week later, they won't call you a fool because something's happened in their life and they want to know an answer to a spiritual matter. Today may not be the day they may be a prospect, but today they may not be a good prospect. It might be a week from then. It might be a year from then. It might be when you come back in 2012 to do a gospel meeting, you find out somebody that you talked to in 1994 obeyed the gospel in 2009 and is now a member of the Sanford Church of Christ. I didn't know any of that. You just don't ever know when you spread the gospel, when it will take root and grow. There are three words that are I believe to be the most powerful evangelistic tools, easy to understand, easy to learn, and easy to say. Jesus said it in John chapter 1. And verse 39, come and see. And Philip said it to his brother Nathanael later in that chapter, John chapter 1, verse 46. You know, when you say something, you guys probably already know this. A lot of the people that you come into contact with, they have a history with the church. Not everybody does, but a lot of them do. Why would you tell somebody who has had a history with the church, come and see? You know why, Lynn? Because a lot of people have a misguided notion about the Church of Christ. A lot of people believe things that aren't true, and a lot of people have had bad experiences. And I mentioned one of them in class this day that I had in Sanford, North Carolina, that very easily could have caused me not to remain a Christian after I had already become a Christian. So when we're saying come and see, what we're saying is give us a shot. You know what I tell people when I tell them that, Si? If I say come and see and they come and they have the same exact experience they had 3 years ago at a Church of Christ, I say, tell me. You tell me if it's the same way. You tell me if what you've heard about the church in a negative way is true. You tell me and I will go to my elders, and if it's true, we will fix it. Isn't it true that we should be the most welcoming, kind, loving group of people on earth, compassionate and loving our neighbor as we love ourselves? Is that true? Then we should never, ever mistreat anybody in any way that could cause someone who might be interested in the gospel if we would just be kind and compassionate and share the gospel with them. What's the difference? And this is a really key point. This is something I thought about 20 years ago. There is a difference between being evangelistic and practicing evangelism. You know what the difference is? You guys probably do this. You probably have a group like we do at Chase Park. This is our Barnabas Project meeting. We meet four times a month. Every Sunday afternoon, we meet at about 4:30 for 30 minutes, and we talk about people that are visiting. We talk about people that we're having Bible studies with. And this group of people sends cards. You probably send cards, right? They send cards to people. You know what that is? That's evangelistic. When you have somebody, Jackie, there's Jackie. Hi, Jackie. When you have people come in that are visitors, you have somebody greeting them. You need to have somebody that's very gregarious and very open, has an open nature to themselves, and make them feel warm and welcome and bring them in and help them find a seat. And here's how we do it at Chase Park, and it's working for us, is when that person does that and they bring it in, you know what that person, if you're the usher, you're the greeter, and after you've brought someone in, you know what he would do? He would go find somebody that is of the same demographic as that person, and he would say, I want you to go meet the visitor that's here for the first time today, so they immediately make a connection with somebody they can relate to. Because as Chris said earlier in Bible class, and so did our sister, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, said in Bible class, today in the 21st century in the United States of America, evangelism is about relationships. It's about establishing a relationship, building that relationship, and gaining the trust with the person so that they will eventually listen to you when they're willing to share the gospel with you. A Barnabas Project team, cards, welcoming people, having people over to your house, that's evangelistic. This is evangelism. This is Pablo Luck. He immigrated here 6.5 years ago from Brazil. Showed up at our congregation. I studied the Bible with him. He became a Christian. He's studying with one of his employees right here. Evangelism is the opening up of a Bible across the table from somebody and sharing God's Word. See the difference? Everybody in a congregation should be evangelistic, which are works that support the evangelism ultimately coming to the Bible study. You know what? Not everybody in this congregation today is prepared to have a Bible study, right? Am I wrong, Brian? You know what? Same everywhere. And guess what? That's okay. That's okay. But if you want to learn to be involved with that, you have people here that can help you with that. I think I mentioned in class today, I've had 36 people go with me on Bible studies that have never been to a Bible study before in their life, never held a Bible study before in their life, because they want to get to the point where they don't have to ask me. They want to get to the point like Ruel did, where they can go teach their own family and not have somebody help them do it. Everybody can be involved in encouraging people to accept and obey the gospel in a congregation, and everybody should be involved in some way in that effort. And then when somebody is interested, guess what? Brian and the elders can help you with that. They can help you with whoever it is that needs to match up with that person to study the Bible with them. I guarantee you, don't be scared of local evangelism thinking. Here's what most people over the last 25 years have been scared of when I start talking to congregations about evangelism. You know what the first one is? Guess what it is? First thing that comes to their mind, I'm going to have to go knock on someone's door that doesn't, I don't know, they don't know me, and they don't want me at their door, right? And you know what most people do with that? They don't ever do it because that's what they think of. And the second thing is, I'm not ready to have a Bible study with somebody, so I don't want to be evangelistic because I don't know what question they'll ask me. You know what I tell people when they tell me that? Well, what is the next question they're going to ask you? You know what the answer to that is? You have no way of knowing that. I've been asked every question in the world over the years, and you can't prepare for everything, but what you can do is you can't let that stop you. Because if you can't prepare for everything, you can prepare for what you can do what study you can, and you can answer most questions, but then sometimes you get asked a question, you know what you need to say when you don't know the answer? I don't know the answer. I've never been asked that question before, but I'll study it and I'll come back and next week we'll talk about it, right? Let me ask you something. What if you had that answer every time someone asks you a spiritual question? Really, 5 minutes, huh? We only got 5 minutes left. You can say that sometimes with somebody that's interested, and that's perfectly acceptable, and they're going to understand it. But if every time somebody asks you a question of a spiritual nature, you say, I don't know, it's time to start spending time in God's Word so that you can know. Because you're going to lose people that might otherwise be interested. Doesn't mean you have to know everything, but just because you don't know everything shouldn't stop you from being evangelistic to set up the opportunities for people that can hold the Bible study, and maybe you can be in the Bible study with them and learn how to do it yourself. This is Pablo studying with Diogo in an effort to have him obey the gospel. What does it look like when the whole congregation gets involved? Not just the preacher, not just the elders, but everybody. Well, here's a picture. Jared, who is an engineer on the Arsenal in Huntsville, no religious training. He is baptizing his middle daughter, Anna. All right. Here is Cody Gothart, who is at this picture. He has studied with and has just finished baptizing his fiance. They are now married and they have one child and another child on the way. Neither of these people have any religious training, just Cody grew up in the church. This is John Denny. John Denny used to do what I do at Chase Park. He did it for 27 years. He was an elder of the church. He's retired. But when he retired, he didn't quit evangelizing. Here he is evangelizing a guy that's a friend of somebody that I had studied with that had become a Christian. So here's another person. He's not one of the current preachers. Now, he was a preacher, but he's a retired preacher. And he continues to do the Lord's work and evangelize. This is me with Pablo. Like I told you a little while ago, I studied with Pablo. When I met Pablo, he was at our building. First time he ever came, he drove by because it said Church of Christ. He was a member of a splinter group of the Seventh-day Adventists down in Brazil. And he saw the sign Church of Christ, didn't know anything about it, spoke about three words of English. It took a long time to study with him because I didn't know Portuguese and don't know Portuguese. But we got through it, and he obeyed the gospel. 3 months later, his wife moves here from Brazil with their two children. And Micah Matheny, one of our members, grew up in Brazil and is fluent in Portuguese. So here I am sitting where the camera is, taking a picture of Micah, a member of our congregation, no religious training, and he's studying the Bible with Tassiani because he can speak Portuguese, because Pablo knew three words and she knew no words in English. So I'm just there in case Micah had a question about something she might have asked. And then, same thing I mentioned in Bible class, when Micah finished the study, he'd never baptized anybody before. So he says, will you baptize Tassiani? What did I say? Not a chance. I'm not going to baptize her because you're the one that did the study, and the rest of the congregation needs to know that members of the congregation can do this from start to finish, completion, bring a person to a decision point about Christ, and then be involved in baptizing them into Christ. There's no way in the world that I would do that in that situation. When I'm in the mission field, when I told you I baptized Ruel that day, you know why I did that? Because it was after midnight. The whole rest of the time I was in Saipan, all the people that were baptized when I was in Saipan, I didn't baptize a single one of them. Boyette Cabaluna did, the located preacher did. Because we need to do that. We need people to understand this isn't just the preacher's job. It's everybody's job. And they can do it. You can do it. Then after Tassiani was baptized, guess what? Her mom Sylvia comes to visit from, from Brazil. And guess what we do? In the new converts class, I am, just like I do in the mission field in countries where they don't speak English, I will teach something, Pablo translates it, and then he and Tassiani can talk to her in Portuguese to make sure she understands what it is that's being taught. This is another. This is in my backyard. I have the biggest baptistry in Huntsville, Alabama. And this is Joseph Miller. He's a cousin of one of the ladies of our congregation. And we studied for about 2 months, and he wanted to obey the gospel. We were studying in our house, and we just went right back out in the outside in the backyard to be baptized. And then after that, this is Dustin Mooring. This is his cousin. Joseph and I and Dustin studied with him, and it was in February, and I've never done this before in the United States. In February, when it was about 27 degrees, he wanted to be baptized in Hurricane Creek, and right down the road from where he lives. And so that's what happened, is in the middle of the winter, we went down, and he was baptized into Christ, cousin of Joseph's. There's a picture of us after that baptism. The two ladies on the right are the ones. By the way, in about 2.5 years, these ladies cooked meals and hosted Bible studies 65 times in their house for people that eventually became Christians, eventually obeyed the gospel, or at least a lot of them obeyed the gospel. This is Beverly Miller. This is Beverly Miller's aunt that also got interested from that original Bible study when they started studying with people, and she wanted to study the Bible, and she, I'm guess she was somewhere around 70 years old, and she too obeyed the gospel. This is a couple that's also related to them at the same place, same ladies, same cooking the meal for the people to come study the Bible with us. And she and her husband, we studied for about 6 weeks. And you know what happened? Walked away without obeying the gospel. Did not obey the gospel. Same exact study, same exact place, same exact process of going through. Because you know what? You can't make that decision for them. They said no to the gospel. And the next picture I'm showing you, not only did Gary say no to the gospel, he slammed his Bible shut and stood up and stormed out of the house after hearing the conclusion of the Bible study. Why do I share that with you? Because it's not right and it's not fair for someone to stand in front of you and say it always works out. Because it'll cause you to be disappointed when it doesn't. I can't even tell you how many times over the years I've studied with people that have eventually come to a decision point about Christ and said no to the gospel. But that's our role. Our role is to give people the highest probability of saying yes to the gospel with the understanding that they might say no. It's not our goal to baptize people. That's God's business. Our business is to share the word of God faithfully with them, and if their heart is right and if they want to obey the gospel, then they can. How much time do I got left? Is that however much time you want, or we're done for now? Okay. All right. I don't want to start this one right now. I mentioned to somebody earlier about a lady that might be from her congregation, but I want to spend some time with this after lunch, okay? And we'll just get through whatever we can get through of this material today. Starting tomorrow night, starting Monday night, we've got some things that we specifically will have to cover in the lessons because it is the study that I do with everybody now. And there's 6 essential truths that I cover with people before I believe that they're a candidate to be baptized into Christ. So we'll do that. We'll finish this material, Lord willing, after lunch, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll go through the exact thing I go with people so that you can see what I do. It doesn't mean you have to do it, but it's been working for me. If you have a need this morning, whether it be to be baptized into Christ, if you understand what you need to do, we'd love to help you with that. If you don't and you'd love to study the Bible, I guarantee you we have people here today that would love to share the gospel with you. If you have a need because you've fallen away from the Lord and would like to have us pray for you and pray with you, please let your need be known while we stand and while we sing.